hammer out the final detail.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, on to item 8.
From Corporation Counsel, requesting authorization to amend Section 201.24, Sub 3.3, 3.5, and 3.11 of the Milwaukee County Code of General Ordinances as it pertains to pension benefits in preparation for implementation of possible state-mandated employee pension contributions. At the June meeting cycle, this item was laid over. It's also referred to the Committee on Finance and Audit, the Pension Study Commission, and the Pension Board. The Committee on Finance and Audit approved a substitute ordinance by a vote of 6-0.
Thank you. Mr. Grady.
Mr. Chairman, you have before you an original resolution that was before the committee last month, which we asked, or I asked, that you not act on because we needed further information from the actuary and from DAS staff on how to calculate the percentage that employees were going to pay. And so we needed some more time to work on that. The actuary wanted more time to work on that. Since then, we also had the biennial budget that was adopted that contained additional provisions that affected this resolution. And that's why you have in front of you a substitute resolution. The substitute resolution makes several changes from the prior resolution. One was based on the advice of the actuary on that we would base the calculation on what's called the actual required contribution rather than the budgeted estimate contribution, because that number is a more precise number based on actual experience data. And so that provision is in there. The second provision that's in there is a requirement from the biennial budget that requires that we exempt from pension contributions non-represented law enforcement and firefighting managerial employees. So we had to add that provision as well. The other third reason is that we now know the effective dates. At the time this was originally before you, it was written in the provisionally without knowing the actual effective dates, and now it has the actual effective dates in it. So I would ask the committee to adopt the substitute as finance did. Mr. Langer has the actuary has prepared a report, a substitute report based on the substitute resolution, and based on his further study and discussions with Mr. Mansky, and also with the review of how the Wisconsin retirement system handles this calculation for their system. Mr. Langer is out of town, but he is available by cell phone and is standing by should you wish to talk to him.
Thank you. Supervisor Schmidt.
The only question I have is, and we went through this in finance, of course, yesterday, but we made the changes that are necessary, like you talked about. And this is an example, going back and making sure we have everything dotted. Was there a change from previously post-tax or state law that this is pre-tax now, correct? Is that part of the resolution, or was that a given anyway?
That was part of the original resolution and is carried forward into this resolution. And
so these are pre-tax payments again, of course. Right?
If you adopt this, it will be pre-tax. If you do not, it may not. It will probably be post-tax.
Well, I'm going to make a motion to approve to go along with finance, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification. The item that was handed out this morning,
that's number 9.
9, but is that actually?
Should it be 8?
That is 8, actually. Let's see if the title seems to match more appropriately with this item.
Yeah, it goes with the. Actually goes with both.
It replaces the June 10th letter with the July 19th lettermark.
I don't know what went out, so I'm
updating the Buck Consultants letter of.
This was the original board package from June, and now here's the July 19th letter.
It's 9.
It's labeled 9.
In both items.
The report dated July 19th is the actuary's report for the next item.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then I guess my other is relative to whatever changes were made by finance. Do we have a marked up?
It's the substitute.
July 11th substitute.
For the record, near the bottom. Joy was once again wonderful and made no mistake. Thank you.
Okay.
This, the revisions were so substantial, it made more sense to do a substitute rather than a marked up amendment.
Okay.
Page 78.
Ah, very good. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Supervisor Schmidt.
I'm done. I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh, Mr. Mansky.
If I could just add to Mr. Supervisor Schmidt's comment about the taxability. The employee contributions are deductible from the gross wages before taxes for state and federal purposes, however, not for FICA. It's still it's not a deductible item for FICA taxes, and that's just one of the standard provisions that's out there.
Thank you very much. Any further questions or comments?
If I may, just because it's always asked by most employees, the resolution calls for the contribution percentage for 2011, the balance of 2011 and 2012, to be 4.7%. It will be recalculated every year. The way it's set up in the ordinance is that the county board will set the percentage in the budget cycle as part of the budget.
Can you, Brainerd, explain for the committee how that 4.7 was arrived, or what's included in the calculation and what isn't?
Okay, I got the disclaimer is you're talking to your attorney now, not your actuary, not your controller. But subject to that disclaimer, the actuary has to take the entire cost of the system, the liabilities of the system, and determine how that gets spread among the active employees. And he wanted my direction, really, the legal direction, is to look at the state system because they have a similar requirement and talk to the state about how they do this calculation. It's difficult because they don't do it the same. They don't calculate their contribution the same as we do. They never have done it the same way. They separate individuals into groups. They have other smoothing factors that we don't have. But we still look to them for the general overall principles. And so the idea here was you would take all the liabilities of the system. Unlike the prior report, the actuary did include in this report the administrative expenses of the system in that calculation. We have to take out, or the actuary took out, based on the state retirement system, those who are not contributors. He calls them non-contributors. So we have public safety workers and non-represented public safety workers who are not contributing. And so the active employees who are contributing are not going to pay one half of the non-contributors' benefits. So they're separated out. Then we have what is referred to as a prior service liability, the unfunded liability, that has to be allocated. And he essentially allocated that pro rata between the active employees, the non-contributing active employees, the deferred vested retirees, so people who are former employees but not yet receiving a pension, and the retirees. And he did it essentially a pro rata basis. And the bottom line is you end up with a 4.7%. I guess I'm going to defer to Mr. Mansky.
Yes. The full amount of the contribution is $26.8 million. Subtracted from that is the amount of the prior service costs that is associated with retirees, which is about $3.9 million or 2% of that number. Then what is reduced from there is for the non-contributors, their portion for the public safety officers and that. And that's about another $3.7 million. Then further subtracted is the administrative cost associated with the retirees. So what you're left with then is $18.1 million, and you take half of that, which would be approximately $9 million or 4.7%. That $18 million represents the normal cost for the non-public safety group and a proportional share of the prior service cost plus a proportional share of the administrative cost. The state of Wisconsin, in essence, has two pension plans, one for active employees and one for retired employees. So when they are calculating their percentage, they are calculating it only on the active pension plan. They have amortization factors within their plan, which are much faster than our amortization. They're in the range of probably 12 to 15 years, where we are is probably around an average of around 20 years. So that's some of the reasons. Also, they have a lower interest rate that they expect to receive each year. They're about 7.2% they expect as an investment return. We are at 8% for an expected investment return. So the calculation after talking with the state and reviewing their actuarial report for their active employees, we looked at that methodology, and Larry Langer, then the actuary for the county's pension plan, went and did the calculations. I then reviewed the calculations to see that I could verify it against the actuarial report and the numbers that we have available to see if I could calculate the same numbers, and we came within the same dollar amount. We didn't know all of these types of things, and I apologize for the prior time that we were at here that we didn't have knowledge of all of these items. So, but as of the present time, we're in agreement as to the 4.7%. Also included in his report was a projection of going forward of where that percentage would go. And sorry about that. And he's predicting that in 13 it would be 4.9, 14 5.1, 15 4.9, and in 2016 5.4. One of the items that are also on your agenda today is regarding the 1.6 multiplier and the age 64 for new employees. That's going to have an impact on your annual pension contribution, as you'll see when we review that report. That may change these percentages going forward also.
Thank you very much. So in other words, employees who are active employees right now that are contributors, which are everybody other than the fire and the police, the safety people, they're only paying, the percentage for their payroll they're only paying is to cover the expenses and the funding of the pension that represents their portion of it. So they're not paying to cover expenses for retirees or non-contributors.
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Grady, for an attorney, you're a pretty good bean counter. You did a good job explaining it. Is this... going this route, it seems like we're following as close as possible the way the state's doing with their plan. Are we adhering then to the budget repair bill, what's required of us to do in the budget repair bill, using this percentage and that methodology to calculate it?
The short answer, Mr. Chairman, is yes. I'd like to expand on that a little bit. The language of the statute says employees shall contribute one half of the actuarially required contribution, but that's not defined anywhere. And so we turn to our actuary and ask him, and we turn to the state and look at what they're doing with that same language. It seems, to me, apart from the basic language, unfair to ask people who are contributing to pay for the benefits of people who aren't contributing. So that's why you exempt out public safety workers, for example, and the actuary agreed with that. He was the one who decided the way that this should be allocated across the real issue is the prior service liability, the unfunded liability, and how to handle that in this calculation. It was his recommendation to handle it as he has written it in the report. And I said to him, you really should look at the only analogy we have, which is the state system, because they have the same language. So we should model ours as much as we can. And that's what Mr. Mansky was talking about. They're not perfect mirrors of each other because they're different systems. But the principles are they do the same thing in effect. They allocate prior unfunded liability amongst the various groups, as Mr. Langer has done it here. So the short answer again is yes. I think we are in compliance with the state law.
Okay, thank you. And just one last question: the number, the way that we arrived at the 4.7, is that the only allowable number under the law, or is that the minimum allowable number under the law?
It's my belief, based on the actuary, that that is the number under the law. There is no other number.
Thank you. Any other supervisor looks at?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The way that unfunded liability is taken into account, the pension obligation bonds, the $400 million that we put into the pension system, goes, I mean, that reduced the unfunded liability that in that calculation. So had we not done that, had, I didn't vote for it, so had you all not done that, it would actually be higher now, that this under this scenario where the employee's share would be higher because the unfunded liability would be $400 million greater?
Yes, the unfunded liability, what the payment did, the payment of $400 million did, is that it reduced the unfunded liability at that time. And therefore, if that payment had not been made, then the employees would be paying a much larger percentage because the unfunded liability would be a much larger number, and therefore the amortization of that would be a much larger number.
Okay. So in a way, because the county is picking up those payments, that debt service on that $400 million, the county is actually contributing. It's sort of if you netted out that unfunded liability that's really borrowed funds that we've parked in pension fund, the county is actually paying all the costs on that $400 million. And then we're splitting the remainder, right?
Correct.
That's interesting. Well, it's a, I had my reasons on pension obligation bonds, but in this scenario, it was a good deal for the employees had we known that this was what was coming. But our share as a county of the true unfunded liability, if you really take into consideration borrowed funds, is actually higher than 50%.
Mr. Hare?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Lipscomb is absolutely right in terms of the impact of the POB, and that's why our direction to Mr. Langer was to mirror the state. The state indeed issued $1.7 billion in POBs just a couple of years before we did, and that's how they treated theirs as well. So I think part of the underlying rationale on that, just stepping apart from mirroring the state, is our unfunded liability was built up based on a number of things, one of which was benefits enhancements, second of which was a devastating market. And you could see with those two, you could make an argument on. But the third was, it was in part due to underfunding. So we put ourselves in a position of having that unfunded liability. So and the state was in a very similar boat. Now, part of their $1.7 billion POB was to fund their unfunded health care liability. So theirs wasn't all pension like ours was, but they still had a big chunk that was pension, and they carved that out from their calculation as well. But, and just one other thing, if I could. I can understand some level of discomfort about the state being at 5.8 and us being at 4.7. I think, though, the fact that we are exempt from the state's insurance provisions, we are not at that 12.6 because we don't participate in their health care plan, that we may, I'm not going to say we do, but we may kind of offset that difference by having, I think, a more significant contribution to the healthcare costs at Milwaukee County than state employees do. That has been the trend over the last decade or so. I think that just given the changes that you've all made in the last couple of budgets, we're going to be well beyond that 12.6% of the premium costs for health insurance. But I know it's a separate item, but these things tend to all become part of the compensation discussion, and so it is relevant to that as well.
Thank you very much.
All right, getting at it a little different way, though. I mean, so in the one scenario, I'm suggesting that employees benefit from that. On the other hand, if as long as we're sort of isolating these into two different buckets or whatever you want to say, why wouldn't we have, was one of the possibilities that we would actually look at what is the normal cost going forward for employees and having them pay half of that, which would be less, wouldn't it?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, that's correct. If we were isolating on the normal cost, that would be, well, Mr. Maskey knows the figures better than I think it would be less going forward.
Yeah, because it does seem unfair that, so the person starting today is paying for the underfunding over the last 20 years, even with the POBs, it doesn't make up for the fact that, I mean, it still means they're coming into a system that's underfunded. Whether it's underfunded or it had losses, whatever it did, it's underfunded.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I don't think I fully answered the supervisor's question. So you're correct about the math, but I don't think the law allows that.
Okay.
The law asks for one half of the actuarially required contribution, which includes some allocation for prior service liability. It's just the way it is. The question is how to allocate that prior service liability. The actuary has answered that, I think. And so, you know, as you go forward and you look at what the percent's going to be going forward, from my perspective, there's really two drivers of that. One is how the market's going to do. I mean, the predictions that Mr. Manske read you from the actuary about the going forward, those assume 8% exactly every year for the next 4 years. If we do better than that, obviously that will factor to drive that down. If we do worse than that, we have another bad market, that'll drive that percentage up. The other factor is our liabilities. You are taking measures today and in the past and to decrease your liabilities. That will have an effect, hopefully, to decrease that percentage, both for the county and for the employee. So, but the two factors really that drive this are assets, liabilities, and the liabilities are decreasing because of the measures you've taken. So far, the last couple of years, the assets have been increasing since the devastating loss of 08, 09.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Mr. Langer, our actuary who prepared the report, was not available to come to the meeting today, but he is available by a conference call. If any member feels that you would like to ask him specific questions, we can do that.
There's another opportunity, Mr. Chairman. We hope to be scheduling early next week meeting the Pension Study Commission to give us another opportunity so as we reflect on it, if anyone has additional questions, we can air it out at that time.
Thank you. We have a motion.
The one thing that I wanted to add is that initially the pension contribution came out of 2011 Wisconsin Act 10, which was the budget repair bill. Wisconsin Act 32, which was the budget bill, basically left the provision pretty much the same for the county. However, it gave an exemption to non-represented law enforcement or firefighting managerial employees, which was not previously in the provision. And I think the substitute resolution excludes them under this. They use the words, they don't use the words public safety, they use the words non-represented law enforcement or firefighting managerial employees. We're still discussing, you know, who that is, but we're talking about 25 to 30 people that this would provide an exclusion for. However, the other thing that they added is any new employees in law enforcement or firefighting who start after the effective date of this bill would have to begin making pension contributions.
And you appreciate the legislature making everything as clear as mud. Okay, we have a motion by Supervisor Schmidt to approve the substitute resolution. To concur with finance and audit, which approved the substitute resolution.
Correct.
Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing nothing, please call the roll.
Borkowski.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Caesars.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Six ayes, zero noes. The motion to concur with finance and audit is approved.